Welcome back to the Rebuildable Podcast. I'm your host, Matt Gentile. I know it's been a while, about a month since you've heard an episode of the Rebuildable Podcast, but life has taken some crazy turns in a good way with work, with my personal life. But I'm happy to be back behind the microphone. And the last thing that we did is we had our Analyzing Acme series, which seems so well-timed given what's transpired probably in the last month. The last episode that dropped was regarding Zach LaVine and the decision for Acme to extend him. And I dropped it on purpose on January 15th because that was the first day that Zach was eligible to be traded. And go figure that comes back, plays okay, and then has this issue with his foot and now is out for the rest of the season. Probably the worst case scenario if you're Acme in this situation. But to me, still no excuse for inactivity last week. Like, this was the perfect opportunity to ultimately reset the situation here in Chicago. And guys like Alex Caruso, DeMar DeRozan, Andre Drummond were at their highest possible value. Yet, Acme stayed silent. Arturas Karnišovas, Mark Eversley, they chose to stand pat like they have at every trade deadline since 2022. And it makes no sense to not make any moves. I get it. Alex Caruso, great story. This guy is one of your best defenders, heart and soul of the team. I get it. But man, his value is at its absolute highest. And this is somebody that does struggle from time to time to stay healthy. And you can't guarantee that next year, he's going to be the same Alex Caruso you have now. Same with DeMar DeRozan. Given his age, this was the time to make something happen. And he's not under contract next year. This is when you try to recoup some assets if he ends up not re-signing with you, which is a likelihood. And then Andre Drummond, same situation. You could have recouped something for him. Instead, there's a good chance he walks. And I feel like these three guys, you could have at least restocked the cupboard a little bit and taken a short-term hit for potential long-term gain. But as we heard from Arturas Karnišovas in his press conference, the Bulls are not in the business of taking any minor step back, which to me is a fallacy. You should be okay taking a little bit of a hit for that larger gain of being in the championship contending window. I think what we found out is Arturas Karnišovas has a very liberal definition for the term competitive. Right? He wants to be competitive, and it sounds like competitive to him and to the Bulls is being a nifty play-in team, a team that might get at the bottom of the playoff picture. What does that necessarily do? I get Miami, you know, defied the odds last year and found themselves in the NBA Finals being a play-in team. But in the NBA, you can't always guarantee that. And there is a big difference between that Miami team and this Bulls team. And you know me, I'm not the biggest Jimmy Butler supporter or biggest Jimmy Butler fan, but Jimmy Butler does have that superstar quality. Who on the Bulls really has that? Love DeMar DeRozan. You know, all-star caliber player. You know, clutch offensively, but not necessarily a guy I would say is a bona fide superstar. Same with Zach. Love Zach LaVine, what he's brought to this team. Not necessarily a bona fide superstar. So if that's the case, great. We're going to be stuck in this NBA hell. And I know as a Bulls fan, I don't want to be stuck in this NBA hell forever. Now, there are some bright spots to me. And Arturas Karnišovas was happy to tell us about the great stories on this team, which to me is a little concerning for, you know, a VP or an executive to bring up. But Ayo Dosunmu has been a great story. Kobe White has been, to me, the best story of the season. I think pretty much all of Bulls fans agree with that. But, and I think a lot's been said about Coby White to this point, but after last night's performance against the Atlanta Hawks, it got me thinking about Io a little more. And I guess I just hadn't really paid attention to the numbers a lot, but you know, the counting stats, 10 points a game, shooting 41% from 3-point range. But when I dug in to what he's done since the new year, I was really shocked. So I went to Basketball Reference and pulled up the game logs, and I counted everything from just Jan 1. So you're looking at about a 20 game sample size, and I would assume it was averaging just under 14 points a game. But one eye popping stat to me, he's shooting 49% from 3-point range. Right, he's attempting about 4 threes a game, but shooting at a very efficient clip. And I think that has me encouraged. You know, seeing Io Dosunmu take that next step, knowing that Coby White took a step. And, you know, I think it's a big credit to both of them for putting in the work. I will give some credit to the Bulls organization. I think Peter Patton, sounds like, really has worked closely, we know, with Coby White. I think some of that's spreading to Io Dosunmu as well. So I'm excited about those two guys. If I have a glimmer of hope or something I could take away from the 2024 season, it's that there's some young pieces that I feel this team can start to look at building with. And, you know, there's part of me that just wishes this summer is when there is this soft reset. And it could be coming just organically, right? With potentially DeMar DeRozan signing elsewhere in the summer, or with a trade of Zach LaVine, which seems like the front office really wants to do. I think there could be a soft reset coming. I think the LaVine trade might happen as we get into next season to try to recoup his value. But it does give me some hope that maybe there's some young pieces that maybe they're not superstars, but they're certainly younger players you can build with. And that, to me, is what I'm interested in. Who could be here potentially for the next championship core for the Chicago Bulls? I guess no matter how long it takes. I do have somebody here to chat with about the current state of the Bulls. He is with On Tap Sports, and he's been somebody that I've been kind of following on the peripherals on Twitter. He goes by MoBanks10 on Twitter, or X. I know I still struggle with that. Morris Bankston joins us now. Morris, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Really excited to be on the pod. Definitely love this pod and, you know, all the various iterations. I know, you know, Drew, who we both know, you know, loved it when you guys were co-hosting a lot of the in-depth conversations that you were having. So it's a big, like, yeah, it's a big thrill to be on here and I guess offer my Bulls thoughts.
No, I'm glad to have you. And I've always, as I was kind of hinting to the listeners before you hopped on, I've always kind of listened to you I've paid attention to you in the peripherals, right? Like, always seen you on X, you know, at MoBanks10, just, you know, commenting either on like the podcast episodes or, you know, kind of dropping your thoughts during Bulls games. And I feel like, you know, a lot of other of the content creators are kind of picking up on you a little more. And I noticed it a lot last year. Yeah. And then all of a sudden I see, you know, you're with On Tap, you've dropped some articles recently. So
yeah.
What got you into the Bulls content sphere?
You know, that question, well, I've thought about it a lot, especially since I've come on board On Tap. You could probably file this into like one of many of society's like pandemic stories. When the NBA shut down, right, like back in 2020, there was no basketball at all. And what I started doing that was interesting was like, I was kind of starved for basketball because it was that time of year. It's March 2020. And like that time of year, I'm usually watching a ton of basketball. It's like, I love NBA. I love college as well. There's no basketball. So I just started watching like old NBA games and just all games, footage, whatever on YouTube. And in that process, you know, I ended up getting to, Kobe Bryant had that one show on ESPN where he used to do basically like it would be him doing like a film breakdown. And I got really into that. It just like I got like I watched every single clip that I could find on there because there was something about like him like listening to Kobe and then the other people you have on there, like Phil Jackson and Rodman, like especially because I mean they're breaking down like 90s Bulls film. Like that just it sparked a different sort of thinking about like the game. And for some reason, like I guess like it was the first time where like I really started thinking critically about the schematics and like how basketball is actually played. I've watched it my entire life, but up to that point, I would never have said like I was like super articulate about like how the game is played. And that was a starting point for me because of like having all this extra free time because of a global pandemic, where it's just like I started thinking about it more and more. And then, you know, the league finally restarts, we go back to the bubble. I'm watching the games with like a different eye. And then the following season, when it's like non-bubble or like when the league was getting back to being normal, I like when the finals happened, the Boston and the Warriors finals, I decided just to like as an experiment because my wife and I we recently just had a second child. I decided I'm just gonna live tweet the finals and just talk about the finals and see what happens. And it wasn't like there wasn't any resounding viral moments I hadn't, but it was that was the first dipping my toe into like basketball content voice. And I liked it. And things were starting to happen with the Bulls as well in parallel because at that point Acme's on board. The beginnings of like that massive roster overhaul is happening at the same time. And then like the experience I had live tweeting the finals, I wanted to carry that over into Bulls content, Bulls tweeting, because I mean that's my favorite team. And that felt like a logical starting point. So like the beginning of that 21-22 season is when I just started, tweeting on a consistent basis. And the thing I started that like the core of what that was for me is I did live game tweet threads of Bulls games starting last season actually. Feels like it was forever ago, but it wasn't all that long ago. And that's kind of like how I got here.
Yeah, it's you know what? I feel like there's a lot of similar stories about Bulls Twitter being this hub for kind of creating the next wave of content creators or opening it up for people that get into blogging or get into the podcast sphere. It's kind of like if you ever hear about the old I think it was Real GM board. That used to be where like Doug Tonis and I think Mark Kay, Salim Sirdarwalla, like they all kind of came from that spot and ended up doing, you know, Bulls content too. So it's kind of funny, like that pendulum kind of swung over to, you know, to Twitter and everything. And yeah, but with writing, how's that been? Getting into like more of like the, you know, blogging on the team and kind of doing more dives on, you know, certain players or just things that you're observing. Like what, how's that been for you?
Yeah, I love it. At the beginning of this season, like there was a thought process I was going through, like having gone through that first season last year of doing live tweeting. Even like, I think the season, like I was already kind of planning the seeds there for like being like pivoting towards writing. Just by like tweet threads I would do outside of game days, like there were long form. Threads that there were de facto articles I was writing because I'll say this like my experience with Twitter and Bulls tweeting and content in general like I suppose like my philosophy about it was always to like just try to be consistent and along the way just incrementally add more to my repertoire so to speak and so like start with the game threads and then actually start doing like my analysis, so to speak, in non-game threads, and I'm just expanding. And then, like one of my big influences just in sports in general, like I'm somebody like was like deeply absorbed and obsessed by like 90 SportsCenter on ESPN. So it's like I have that mindset. Like when I talk about sports or when I talk about the Bulls, like I always want to have a good balance between like offering something that is informative yet entertaining as well. So it's like a lot of, it's sort of in the spectrum of like, bring in some insightful stuff about basketball, but also bring in some stuff that, might just be funny, wacky stuff that, draws in a crowd and gets an audience.
I
So.
was gonna say the 'cause like your tweets definitely were something that I took notice to, like, kind of going in long form threads. My favorite, I still love that you consistently every day retweet the sign tapping tweet about, hey, work on trading this core. I love it. Like it's great. Your writing though, I really have been impressed. Like you have a really good writing voice. Like are you like professionally, have you done like a lot of writing before? Is that like part of your 9 to 5? 'Cause you seem like you're a polished writer, at least from my standpoint.
Thank you. I like that. Yeah, compliments sometimes like can like freeze me, and that's one because I've never professionally written before, like on tap. I mean, yeah, writing is something that I think if I think back to like my college days, it's something that just like. I suppose it's something that's kind of innate for me. Like the way I think about writing and the way I structure things, it's one of those things where it's like, I guess in my schoolwork that the writing stuff was never something that I felt like I had to study for. It's just like I thought about it and like writing structure is something I feel, I suppose. It's much more, it's just a creative thing for me. Like I can't pin on anything that I've like developed over the years per se, other than just like I just have to do it. Like it's, I hadn't written in the cool thing is like about Twitter, so to speak, is before I really started being consistent with Twitter, I really hadn't written anything in a long time. And it was refreshing. It was kind of like going back to the gym when I started writing, when I started all this like consistent tweeting, is that it gave me the confidence to do a long form article. And, I have to give credit also to like the guys at C-Rate UK because, they're really cool and like they're great content creators as well. They're like one of the first guys that like really start becoming advocates or supporters of me as far as tweeting. And then as they've grown their platform to like really cool stuff as well, I remember when initially they were just like, this is to the real GM point. I remember when they were just like pretty much like me and they're just tweeting games. And it's amazing also that they live tweet every single Bulls game and they're in the UK. In Ireland, which is like typically like 6 or 7 hours ahead of real Bulls game time. As they grew their platform from just being like guys with a Facebook group and a Twitter presence to then they get their own website and then they start the blog and they start the podcast. They with open arms. I asked them like, hey, can I write like a guest piece just to like try this out? And they're like, absolutely. And from there, they just kind of like gave me, I guess, like a residency to just write stuff and start writing. And then, OnTap saw that work, and I'm sure the Twitter threads and all that too. And it's been like it just feels like a natural progression, honestly, when I think about it in retrospect.
Right, that's awesome, dude. And no, and I encourage everybody else in Bulls Nation, if they haven't followed you yet, to give you a follow, and I'll make sure you share all your details before we hop off today. I do want to talk to you actually though about the Bulls, because there's quite a lot to unpack. And you mentioned consistency. Your Uncle Matty here hasn't been too consistent. I haven't dropped an episode in a month, so I'm the poster child for what not to do, just FYI.
Oh, good.
But this has kind of been an interesting, and I guess before we get to like the details of the last couple weeks and kind of what's been happening, I guess big picture for you, has this season shaken out the way you thought it would, in any way? And I guess let's kind of put it in a vacuum based on the moves the Bulls made. And the maybe lack of inactivity to move some of the pieces that were on the roster. Are you surprised where they're at today, good or bad?
That is, it shouldn't be an existential question, but I feel like that's
No.
where the Bulls are at this point. It's just like, especially since the conclusion of the trade deadline. There was, I would say this, the trade deadline itself was completely unsurprising. I expected it. It's just there's a pattern of behavior that, unfortunately, I think, AK pretty much made clear that, like, this was always going to be, like, a high probability occurrence. How the season is shaken out, I wouldn't use the word surprising, but it's just it's somewhere between disappointment and just apathy, because to the the real underpinning of the sign tapping tweet that I carried on for most of the season, this it didn't have to be like this. I think any rational Bulls fan who watched the second half of the season, because that was the context of like that retweet I've have been doing, like April 2023, I kind of like delivered my final verdict. Like, this is not going anywhere. You have to do something different with this core. Trade one, trade two, trade them all. Doesn't matter, but you gotta trade somebody because the fit is just not there. And like, it's not like this is something that just started at that point either. I mean, you had a body of evidence, two seasons. Granted, like, we all know there's the 35 games of Lonzo Ball and blah, blah, blah. But I feel like that at this point, that has expired. Like, the position of this front office to not execute some sort of a contingency to the loss of that core figure in this span of time, like, it just – it's baffling. I don't understand it. And then to then, deliver remarks that deliver this mantra of competitiveness, it's a farce almost, because it's like, how do we logically process what you're saying? What is it that you see that I'm supposed to see? Because it's not connecting.
I think it's like it's two different definitions of competitive happening within the Bulls front office and within the fan base. And I think what we saw based on that press conference from Arturis Karnišovas, it seems like they're defining competitiveness as let's be a play-in team. Let's try to get to the bottom portion of the playoff picture, like within that 6-5-4, whatever seed in the Eastern Conference. And I feel like us as Bulls fans, I think there's a disconnect. Like, they don't see that there's a pocket of us, probably the majority of Bulls Nation, that would be okay if they just took a short-term hit for a potentially long-term gain to be more of a competitive title contender than anything else. I think that's what's been so disappointing. And that, I think, was like the biggest, knee to the groin after that press conference to me. I don't know. Like, it seems like there's a major disconnect there.
Yeah, I would agree with that. A significant disconnect, and perhaps even just a lack of self-awareness as the person running basketball operations for the Chicago Bulls. Every Bulls game at home in the United Center, there are six championship banners hanging. And to make the suggestion that somehow we should feel competitive for 9C pursuits, that's baffling. And I get there's a generation of Bulls fans who probably never even had the opportunity to witness Dynasty Bulls basketball. I mean, I witnessed it, but at the same time, there's still Bulls fans who remember vividly what the experience was like with Derrick Rose and Joakim Noah, and actually being competitive, being the number one seed in the Eastern Conference, going to the Eastern Conference Finals, being a not just a tough out, but being a dominant team on both sides of the ball.
Yeah.
And to the point where even after, perhaps like, whatever you would consider Derrick Rose's prime, the Bulls were still a competitive team. Like, you could make the case perhaps that like the Garpax era at that point, they're kind of just like running on fumes at that point, as far as like continuing to really try to evolve that roster to title contention. But they were like, that was at least a competitive team. And it's just like, what we've seen over these last two immediate seasons, I don't know how anybody qualifies that as competitive behavior.
You know, it's interesting. You brought up the Derrick Rose era Bulls, and I had this conversation with one of my friends over the weekend that I think the difference with that team is you were like one or two moves away from title contention, or at least breaking through past like the top heavy team or teams within your conference. Like the gap is pretty big here. Like this is a roster that doesn't have that ability to, it's not one move or two moves. It's multiple moves to kind of reset everything and get you to that point. So it's a big difference to me between even like that Derrick Rose era competitiveness and what we're seeing here. Like I think what was concerning, I brought this up before you hopped on, with the inactivity at the deadline, I think what frustrated me the most was there were three players in DeMar DeRozan, Alex Caruso, Ayo Dosunmu, where you had a chance to really restock the cupboard at probably the highest potential value, and you blew it to stay competitive in this race. And I know as somebody who's tapping that sign every day, how upset were you that they didn't cash out on a guy like Alex Caruso in this case, who I know a lot of Bulls fans love? He's really competitive. He is, you know, somebody that you can say is an unequivocal leader of the team. But how surprised were you that they didn't even seem like entertained the option to trade him?
Yeah, I guess, like, on one hand, like, nominally, yes, surprised, but also at the same time, not all that surprised considering, again, the track record of this current Bulls front office. And I suppose, like, really, like, my mindset going into that trade deadline day, it was just hyper cynical because it just, I suppose, like, I already gone through the mental preparation of nothing, literally nothing happening. And it's disappointing because I could rationalize at least, okay, if you don't feel that you have the opportunity to make the major move with either Zach or DeMar or Vooch, that's one thing. But there are, you know, credible options or marginal moves to be made. Because you've seen the resurgence of Andre Drummond's production this season. Alex Caruso is having the best offensive season of his career. Like, and there was a market for both of those guys. And how do you not engage in that market given your position in this current Eastern Conference? Again, it's either like a lack of self-awareness or, yeah, a very different perception of, like, what it means to run a competitive organization. It just it was surprising mixed with cynicism and just disappointment at this point because, I have a hard time taking this organization serious right now.
If it were – and let me kind of, I guess, reframe this question a little bit because it – shocker, you're not surprised. I probably should have phrased this a little differently.
Yeah.
If it were you in that position, let's say you're Arturis Karnišovas, what are you doing at the deadline? Like, are you, if it were up to you, are you parting with all three of those folks? Are you hanging on to one for mentorship for some of these young guys that we'll get to in a little bit? Or are you just saying, nah, let's shut her all down?
One of my recent pieces that I wrote for On Tap Sports, I talked about like what the front office should factor into sort of like strategic decisions about how to navigate the trade deadline. And what I think about it with this current roster and to your point, so if I were in that seat, what would be my primary goal for that trade deadline? For me, that would have been the day I started. Unfortunately, the hard work of starting to re-architect a roster that makes sense around Kobe White as your primary ball handler. He had a slow start at the beginning of the season, but that hot December Kobe had, where Kobe's really kind of leveling himself out to be right now, There's merit in, if nothing else, structuring this roster to, find out pretty quickly, is Coby White our long-term cornerstone piece? Because you at least see the emergence of evidence and signs where, like, maybe this is a guy that, like, should really have the complete set of keys, no attachments, no strings. One number I would point to, like, if you go, like, for anybody who has Clean Glass, or I'll just cite Clean Glass, this season, Coby White is having the highest usage percentage, usage rate of his career. Second. So he had 24.4% usage rate his rookie season. Currently, Kobe's at 23.8% usage rate. I mean, that once you start to get to 25% above, those are the numbers that you're seeing of, like, all NBA guys. So the test I would, like, what I would be thinking about is, like, how can I build a roster where I can get the Coby White to 25% or more usage rate and really evaluate, is production something to continue to scale or have an upward trajectory? Because I think it's important to figure that out. Because if he isn't, I think that's cool. And you have him on a great team-friendly deal. And you need to start thinking about, like, where your moves to, like, capitalize on Coby White's value, whether that be, maybe there's a more affordable extension in the future with the Bulls, or you have to start, creating the market for Coby. That's another thing too, I suppose. Like, going back to the market piece I mentioned with Drummond and AC. My open question, honestly, for the front office is, like, do they understand the market dynamics of the players they have on their roster? And what I mean by that is, do they understand the value that these guys are carrying, and are they actually, like, putting themselves in positions to aggressively sell the value of their players and find ways to maximize value of the roster? That's just that's something I think about a lot, and that would be my consideration. Is, like, I know, like, if I'm being Acme, I'm thinking about, like, these are the players I have. These are players that, like, I find valuable. Here's how I'm going to position the value to all these partner teams. To think about, like, what's the best deal that we can come up with where, again, I can create a roster that evolves from the big three core, Vooch, Zach, DeMar, to at least a Kobe-centric core initially. Maybe there's other ways to augment what Coby is doing. Logically, especially in the last 2 months, it seems like we might have the opportunity to have, like, a credible backcourt between Coby and Ayo Dosunmu.
Yeah, and I mentioned this before you came on too. It kind of goes into trying to find who could be part of the next core. And those guys don't necessarily have to be the, alpha superstars that win because of. But they could be guys you end up winning with and being key, all-star caliber, or potentially just even high-end role players on the team, right? Like, and I think that, to your point, like, that would have been great to see that. And I wish AK and Mark Eversley, use this opportunity to really see what they got. See what you got in Coby White. See what you got more in Ayo Dosunmu. I mean, look, I kicked this whole thing off by talking about, my disappointment, and they're talking a lot about Ayo Dosunmu because, you wrote a good piece back in January, at the end of the month, about Ayo and how, he's quietly having this really good season. I think more people are starting to take notice even the last, couple of weeks, especially after a game he had against Atlanta with his career high. I started looking at since the turn of the new year, he's really putting together a really good stretch here. What has really impressed you, I guess, with Ayo's development this year? Because it's definitely coming as a pleasant surprise, especially after the signings they had this summer, which could have limited his minutes.
Absolutely. Yeah. So the piece that I wrote on sort of like it's quite resurgence. Cause like emergence is really not the word for Ayo. I mean, I was really, there's been a pronounced resurgence of Ayo's performance on the Bulls this season. The first thing that popped out to me when I started taking notice is you've witnessed Ayo really dig himself out of that shooting slump. And I know he's recently given credit to the Bulls shooting coach Peter Patton. So Keep your patent. The shooting is coming back to, a level where, and really now over the last week, especially last night against Atlanta, I think his shooting is finally starting to eclipse what he delivered in his rookie season. Secondary to that, his defense is always a nuanced thing, right? Because it doesn't really translate to the box score stats all that well. But from my eye test, when I look at IO defending right now, I see him like really leveling himself up as a defender in terms of taking tough assignments, quite frankly. One of the things I've been optimistic about, and like early on at the beginning of the season, my hope for IO was let the offense come to him whenever it comes to him, but really like at the beginning of the season, just lock in on being the elite defender that you are and continue to add to it. I think he's really actually he's brought a lot of things to his defensive back that I don't know, again, because like defense is not a box score driven thing in basketball. There's some things that like I would call out, just paying attention to like who he's picking up in his assignments right now. That's something I mentioned in my piece. He's picking up more forward assignments. And I mean, IO isn't a small guard. I mean, he's 6'5" and he's got some size to him. And the way he defends, he knows how to assert himself in a very physical presence as a defender. And there are times where he's picking up like, he'll pick up a larger like wing or even a big in some sorts. And it doesn't always pan out well for him in those matchups, but it's just the willingness and the continued commitment to taking on those matchups that I think is incredibly important for the rest of this season for his development. What like rounding out his development as a two-way player. And it's something where I think those reps, like this is where it becomes disappointing for Acme. If I'm Acme, I'm seeing what IO has progressed in towards or progress into this season, I would have almost no hesitancy about trading Alex Caruso because, in one hand, I can get that haul for AC, and then in the other hand, guess who's coming in right behind AC? Io DeSumo. And again, team friendly deal and an elite defender. And he's in, and actually, his clean the glass numbers too. What I noticed is he's not just on the defensive side, but also offensively. He's playing more minutes at the three this year than he ever has in his career. I believe 32% of his minutes this season, IO is playing as a three, a small forward. So that's also incredibly valuable just because, you now have IO bringing positional versatility on the offensive end to where, yeah, he could be the one, two, or three. And even like, and again, like you have DeMar expiring. So, like it's just moves like not taking the position of not doing anything to trade deadline is baffling to me because not only is it just inactivity, but it's also to me almost like turning a blind eye to the development growth that you've had in two key pieces of your rotation right now. And like why you wouldn't want to at least open up more opportunity for Io and Kobe to grow, it's just beyond me.
Yeah, and it's interesting too. You mentioned just with IO this year and it being a resurgence. Like this happens a lot in the NBA. There's guys that go through that sophomore slump. It's a real thing, and I think it definitely seemed to kind of like hit IO at points last year. But I kind of never had doubts. Like I'm a huge Illini fan, so for me, like I've kind of seen IO have that kind of toughness about him since he was at Illinois, and I'm thrilled to kind of see what he's doing right now. One thing that really surprised me, like when I was looking at his numbers, like I looked at a lot of his numbers post New Year, and you see the 3-point percentage has kicked up quite a bit since the turn of the new year. He's averaging close to 14 points a game. But for the whole year, I know your article called out his true shooting percentage, being in the, I think, upper 50s. He's right now, according to StatMuse, and I pulled this up earlier, he right now is at 61 true shooting percentage, which was surprising to me because the league average for shooting guards right now is 57.5%.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it's amazing.
I mean, that's it's not an end-all be-all stat, but that's a pretty positive, I think, sign for, what could be coming. Because I don't know how you feel. I mean, we talked maybe a little bit offline about this. I see the parallels to Kobe White last year. Like, it almost feels like that same kind of, light switch that went on for Kobe White in the 2023 season. And it seems like maybe that's happening with Io. And he has the benefit. I don't want to overstate Peter Patton, but you got to give the guy credit. He's seeming to get a lot out of, Kobe White now and even Io DeSumo. So, I mean, he has the benefit of now, doing this with a season of Peter Patton too. So I don't know. It's tough because it's also being wasted because of the situation the Bulls find themselves in right now.
Yeah. It's just, it just doesn't seem like a wise move to not organize your roster construction around what your emerging talent is. And it's a wasted opportunity or a missed opportunity, if nothing else. It's interesting you said, because I remember vividly this time. So mid-January to mid-February, I was having a renaissance with Kobe White. I was noticing that in the games. I was calling out my game threads to where the starting point for me was last season when the Bulls beat the Warriors. And granted, I mean, this was like a Warriors team that was not like peak dynasty Warriors per se, but it still had, Klay and Steph still played in that game. And, by all accounts, that was not a Bulls team that had any expectations of being a serious threat in that game. But what popped out to me watching that game and then rewatching clips of it was that was the game to me where Kobe White arrived as at least a credible defender. And being someone who his hustle started to transcend the reputation he kind of had as being this microwave scorer. I just started noticing new things coming to Kobe's game. And before the spin tap, good morning. There was a very pronounced and long Kobe White agenda campaign I had on Twitter where I had the hashtag for cut that check for Kobe. And by March last year, it became clear to me that the Bulls had to re-sign Kobe White. If they didn't re-sign Kobe White, I don't know where we'd be 100%. I do not I think the lottery would be where the Bulls would be right now if it wasn't for Kobe White.
Mm-hmm.
So I think Io has the opportunity to have that same sort of trajectory for the rest of the season. And that, again, that's just a missed opportunity on the front office's part, because I think you could put Io DeSumo in a position where he could really have some high impact, high leverage moments for the rest of the season that could put him into a great position to be a high level player come next season. And these are decisions where I'm just a fan. I'm hypothesizing about it, but at the same time, it's if I can hypothesize about this, why is the front office not thinking like this? They have access to way more resources and input, intel, and data than I ever will have. Mm-hmm. So.
And it's funny because even Arturis Karnišovas called out Io DeSumo by name as a bright spot for the Bulls this year. One of the stories, which I'm a little concerned with anybody in a front office, a GM, a VP, using good stories as a way to justify, lack of or, some type of roster movement. Let the fans decide the good stories. You need to be the objective observer. But still, I think he's right about Io. He has been a great story. And to me, that should have been a justification. I'm 100% in agreement with you to move on from some of these other pieces. Just as we wrap up our conversation here, I want to ask you this question. When we get to mid-April, right around the time of postseason basketball, where are the Chicago Bulls? Where do you think this all finishes?
Oh, man. this is going to be a different April, right? At least as of recording, there's no major buyout savior that's come through this time. It seems like that's also the 1-2, that's the Acme 1-2 punch, right? Like, do nothing in the trade deadline, but then go shopping the clearance rack in the buyout market. It's no Pat Bev walking through that door to quote the illustrious Rick Pitino. There's a possibility, I suppose, where if you're able to get, I suppose, like high level heaters from both Io and Kobe, if you know, there's also the aspect of like, can you rely on Julian Phillips and Dalen Terry to be like high leverage clutch time sort of rotational guys coming off the bench to make whatever run at least Arturis Karnšovas sees in the next quote unquote 30 games, like he said. Those are the variables in play. I think it's, you know, you have to have, but the Bulls at least get back to the, like, a high, like, from my point of view, like, for me to be confident that, yeah, the Bulls are going to be a play-in team, it's because, Io and Kobe are in positions where, like, they're just fueling the offense. Io is, like, being a defensive anchor in a lot of regards. And you're able to get, yeah, like, just high-level sort of bench contributions from Julian Phillips and Dalen Terry at this point because, Pat's injured. We haven't even talked about Patrick Williams. It's just like, the injuries are decimating this team as well.
So if you don't get that contribution from the super young guys, from Dalen Terry, from Julian Phillips, if you get the type of play you're getting now from Io, from Kobe, you're getting what you get from DeMar, you're getting what you get from AC, Drummond seems to be coming and giving you some really good minutes. In that case, do you see probably where we're at now, just 9 seed in the play-in tournament, or you think they move up a little bit with just those contributions?
Yeah, 9 seed is probably where I would pick this Bulls roster come April. 8 seed probably would be overachieving, or at least like their record putting them into an 8 seed. Like, I think that would be an overachievement at this point.
Okay, so Jerry Reinsdorf will be happy that they get to host a game at least. So they got that going for them. There you go. So Mo, can you tell us where can we find your work? Of course, it's on tap, but just give everybody the handles, all that kind of stuff, where they can follow you and follow your work.
Yeah, I'm a deeply devoted person to the name Twitter. So I know it's the X app, but I'm just going to still call it Twitter. So I'm on Twitter. It's also known as X, at MoBanks10. You can find my writing at Bulls on Tap, which is part of the On Tap Sports Network. A lot of great content there, a lot of great writers, a lot of great passionate people who just devoting, putting in, devoted time to share stories about not just Chicago sports, but also, we've got golf there. We've got, for all those that, fancy themselves as a gambler, some of that gambling stuff there too. a lot of good, great content. So check out On Tap Sports Network, Bulls on Tap. And I'm on Twitter at MoBanks10.
Awesome. Yeah, no, I'm love the site. I love On Tap. There's some, good contributors there, I know, especially in the Bulls space, but glad that you're a part of it now. Welcome to the content sphere. And, again, don't listen to your Uncle Matty. Keep it consistent. Don't take long layoffs. That's a bad example, okay? So seriously though, keep up the great work, and thank you again for coming on. We'll definitely get you on again on the Rebuildable podcast.
Yeah, I, my pleasure. Yeah, I love it, man. Anytime you need me, I'm here.
Thank you for listening to the Rebuildable podcast. Be sure to check us out and subscribe on Spotify, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever else you stream your podcasts.